Good evening. Welcome to Off the Wall. I'm Kyle, and I'm joined by Emmanuel.
You know, I'm just thinking what you just said to me right before we went on the air. You asked if I was ready, and I decided I'm going to take offense at that, because how could you think I'm not ready? Why would you think that I have to be asked if I'm ready? I'm born ready. I'm always ready. How dare you? How dare you, Kyle?
Well, next time I won't ask.
Thank you. I would appreciate that. Next time. Which, by the way, I might point out, because I don't think you know this, we're not on next week. There's a blues marathon on next week at this time, and we're not on, so.
And that is a part of the fall radiothon?
Yes, it is. It's a special Fantastic. Part of the fall radiothon. We're the routine part of the fall radiothon.
So this is that magical in-between time where we just had Zapathon, and now we have a blues?
Wasn't Zapathon blues amazing? Marathon? Yeah, we have all kinds of special programs that take place throughout our fundraising days here at the radio station. Fundraising days that we hope our listeners are participating in as many ways as possible. We're trying to participate. It's kind of difficult for us because we do a talk show, and well, we can't take your pledge while we're talking, and I don't think there's anybody in the pledge room again.
Yeah, we are remiss to inform everyone that we are not staffed at the moment, but we've got a solution. We thought this through.
Yes, we're gonna try and come up with some kind of a solution that maybe will work, and we'll try a little bit later on in the show, mm-hmm. where we'll take your phone call on the air, and then put you on hold. One of us will run into the other room, assuming you want to give a pledge, and we'll take your pledge that way. We can try that.
Okay. And sounds good.
And there's no shame if you don't want to pledge either. You can still call up. We're going to try. We're trying to work out the headphone situation now. It's weird. I can hear me, but I can't hear you.
I can't hear me either.
Well, no, I hear you now, but you're kind of low. But when you touch the other button, then I don't hear anything. Yeah, like that. Now I don't hear anything. And what's particularly bad is that our listeners don't notice the difference, and right. It sounds like we're making it up, but
well,
we're not.
I can hear myself now.
Okay,
slightly.
I can only hear half of myself. I'm like wavering in and out.
This is, I think, doable. So right. We've got a solution for that. We will we'll take some calls. We'll see if you guys can maybe pony up a little, because this is an incredible operation, but it's your operation, and we're going to do our part to facilitate those donations, because community radio matters.
And if anyone has a pipe wrench out there, too, that they could bring in, I have some uses for it around here that I think would improve the sound quite a bit.
Some blunt upgrades?
Yes.
Indeed.
Not to the equipment. To certain... Well, I'm not going to get into who in particular, but...
Mentality.
Yeah, just a little
ideas.
Mind adjustment is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But whatever. It's 95 degrees in this room again, so we might sound a little like we're on Quaaludes or something, but we're going to try and keep it real here.
Yeah.
So daylight savings time. Okay, let's start with that. That's exciting, right?
Yes.
We're not in daylight savings time.
It felt confusing. Good.
It felt confusing to me because I didn't know what happened. Again, it just no one talks about it anymore. It just all the clocks in the house, except for the one that receives a signal from the atomic clock someplace, it doesn't get a good enough signal, so you have to literally go up to the roof to get a signal at a certain time of day so that it'll set itself. You can't set it yourself. It has to get the signal, and otherwise you're looking at a clock that's either 1 hour behind or 1 hour ahead, depending on which one just happened. So there's that. I think the only other clock that didn't change was the one in the car. So we had this weird thing where we were leaving and we got in the car. It's like, oh, my God, how did so much time go by between when we left the house and when we got in the car? And then we realized what the problem was. And then it took us about 45 minutes to figure out how to change the clock in the car.
Oh, it was one intersection of a couple blocks.
Yeah, but we shouldn't be doing that while we're driving. You know, it's kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, it was amazing that we were able to do it.
So, there's that. That in our car, our Volkswagen, that is the one of the offenders, one of the diesel offenders.
Yes, yes, yes. But it's actually less offensive these days.
Yes, we're using biofuel.
Yes, we've switched. We're not using fossil fuel in it. So not as much at all. So that's exciting.
It's lying to us, though. It's still lying because of the way they programmed it.
And, yeah,
part of the whole Volkswagen scandal that we're gonna ride this one out and see where it goes. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. It still needs the right kind of emissions technology. We'll update everyone about that.
I'm just glad I'm not involved as far as being blamed for, because imagine how many they have millions of cars they have to like deal with now that they have to do something about. They're going to get fined. People are going to sue them. Customers are going to sue them. Hey, we might sue them. We could do that. It's definitely possible.
I looked at. Yeah, there's a couple people getting involved. A lot of angry customers. Mm-hmm. There's several lawsuits, and you can actually look at some of the legal grounds and so on, and actually watch how those progress. But the first thing is the fix, and we did our small part to use better fuel, but suffice to say, we still need their help, so that's going to be exciting.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be real radio. But back to daylight savings. Yeah, you know, we were discussing this. There was a period of time. The clocks went back, in this particular case, because we're going from daylight savings time to daylight standard time, or... Yeah, Eastern Standard Time, whatever it's called.
Yeah, Eastern Daylight.
Eastern Daylight Time to Eastern Standard. Yeah. All right, whatever. That happens at 2 o'clock in the morning. I guess they do it at 2 o'clock in the morning because that's when people probably won't notice. They'll just go to sleep, and then they'll wake up, and all of a sudden the time will be different, and they won't even know about it. But this year, it was Halloween, okay, so it's likely some people might have been up later anyway. It was also the World Series, so there's that, and it was also the day before the New York City Marathon. So it was a lot of activity going on. I'm not sure how many people were asleep at 2 o'clock in the morning. But at 2 o'clock, what happens is that, let's say you're looking at your cable box, for instance, and it has the time on it. It goes from 1:59 to 1 o'clock. And even if you're looking at a DVR, you know, to record a television program or something, you'll see that it says a program begins at 1 o'clock and ends at 1 o'clock and it lasts for an hour. So they've kind of got it down as far as programming. But what I was wondering was, at 1:30 in the morning, when you're looking at those clocks, you're looking at the time and you see that it's 1:30 in the morning, how do you know which 1:30 it is? Because... there's a 1:30 before the 2 o'clock where the clock changes back to 1 o'clock, and then there's another 1:30 that follows that. And I could not figure out a way to, if you were confused, it was 1:30, you wanted to know if it was the first one or the second one, how would you ever tell? How would you ever be able to tell?
You have to just wait. I think you just wait for things to just come back around.
Just wait, really? That's
yeah, until you run into a situation where you're comparing against an official time source, right?
You can't call the operator and say, operator, which 1:30 is it? They won't know what you're talking about. They won't care.
Well, when people go to worship, they go and they hear the bells on Sunday, and that's how they know in the village.
You know, they might not know, but if the monks or whatever, whoever rings the bells... If they're off, then people are going to wind up going to church an hour off. I heard a noon siren go off at 11 o'clock in the morning.
But is that so bad?
Well, it just...
And was that 11 o'clock your 11 o'clock? Was that their...
Now I'm confused. Should I have heard it at 11 o'clock or at 1 o'clock?
Maybe you were off.
I'm definitely off.
Because you were...
No question about that. No question about that. In the spring, though, it's always fun to meet people at 2:30 in the morning because there is no 2:30 in the morning when they move the clocks forward. So that's something else to consider. But yeah, that's...
of many things.
That's the excitement that we've been facing this week, is daylight savings time ending. And it caught me by surprise. And we were watching the saga of the Mets as they basically figured out ways to blow leads in just about every game I watched, and it was sad. It was sad, but it was fun.
Yeah, I had to not internalize it, because every time I watched, I mean, it just went from a possibility of a win to not at all.
Well, I was telling you, you know, they're ahead 2-0 or 3-1 or something like that. That's not enough. Mm. They need to have a lot more than that to be safe.
And breathing room for them is more than...
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I don't care. It was fun. We all love them. It's great to see this kind of excitement well into November. And Kansas City did just play a better game, I think. So that was a better series of games. So it was just a bit of fun that that we'll remember. And it turns out one of the starting pitchers is from Stony Brook.
Yeah, that was kind of a cool twist. The local celebrities, I guess.
Yeah.
Being on the world stage for their local team and stuff.
And, I think we should be... we should be celebrating that as much as if he actually went to the college here at Stony Brook. He's a mile in the other direction on the other side of the boundary. So what? He's still local and somebody that came from right here and started in the World Series. It's the American dream. And I just don't think there was enough attention paid to it here because he didn't actually attend Stony Brook. I don't know why. He probably could have brought all kinds of fame and fortune to this place in the sporting world, which is what we desperately need.
Yeah. Well, it's sometimes you take all different routes when you're matriculating, and you never know where you'll end up. That's how you learn, maybe, is trying things in other places, and then you have a different perspective when you look at where you come from.
Mm-hmm. So yes, and it turns out this guy comes from two blocks from where I grew up, which is really kind of interesting, too. The old S section in Stony Brook.
Fantastic. That's neat.
All kinds of celebrities come from that section. Nobody comes from the H section or the B section or certainly not the P section, but the S section. And when I say the S section, I mean every street there begins with an S. And that's kind of cool. That's our thing out here. Yes. I want to talk about Europa League a little bit because we have that rematch coming up on Thursday between Napoli and our team.
Midtjylland.
I can't say it Midtjylland. Like you say it. It's the Danish team that we have been corralled into supporting. They got shellacked 4-1 in the last game they played. And this is the second of two games. And after that, we get to play the other two teams, which we beat pretty handily in the past. But if Napoli win, they're through to the next round. There's no question about that. And they'll progress regardless of whether the other two teams, the Belgian team or the Polish team, win or lose or whatever. If Midtjylland win, and Bruges versus Legia, those are the other two teams, end in a draw, the Danish champions and Napoli will be certain of a round of 32. That's the next round. But we're not going to win. I mean, we're going to Napoli. We lost at home last time. So how in the world can we possibly win? You know, if we're lucky, we'll tie. So let's pray for that. The game is on Thursday. Here's a little bit of trivia. I actually found an article about this particular game, so I'm thrilled by that. The journey from Hemming, I believe, is their hometown, to Naples, is around 1,750 kilometers. Yeah.
A long walk.
That's I think they'd have a bus. Midtjylland defender Jim Larsson turns 30 the day after the game. Yeah, that's exciting news. And everything else is pretty much more boring than that. So anyway, that's what's coming up Thursday, and we're the only radio station in the country following this, let alone following that team.
But not the only people. And. Yeah, that's an exciting attribute of this style of programming. We get to cover that.
Yes.
It's cool. It's really cool. We did. We've watched the highlights. We're gonna keep following that and bring more news of it to you all. So cool. If you're watching along with us, please write us if you've noticed anything, or if there's a particular game you think is something to catch, if there's any way to catch it, please send us information. We're interested, as you are.
It would thrill us to hear from a Danish listener.
Yeah.
And we know we have Danish listeners because we've seen them. We visited them. So, yes, if you're in Denmark and you know anything about what we're talking about, even if you don't care, please write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Indeed. So, moving on, what else is in the news?
Sticking with the sports for a second, you know there was a big protest last night at Monday Night Football?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, this is kind of cool. Fire crews were called in to retrieve two activists who rappelled from the press box of Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina, and unfurled a protest banner on Monday night during the nationally televised NFL game.
They're protesting Bank of America?
Well, they're protesting fracking. Basically, it highlighted opposition to a liquefied natural gas project in Lisbee, Maryland, a state in which neither of the two teams plays, the Carolina Panthers and the Indianapolis Colts. But Bank of America is one of the, sponsors or funders of this particular project. So they rappelled down the side of the stadium and caused all kinds of confusion and delays and things like that. And I say bravo. Need more things like that.
Yeah, I could go on and on. I could talk a lot about this, but I would say it's interesting the language that's used around domestic energy. There's a lot of media and a lot of ads out there and almost nationalism around supporting domestic energy. And it's funny because domestic energy is this kind of nice way. It's not exactly talking about traditional energy as a green source, but rather it just appeals to the nationalistic side of energy production, that we can do it ourselves regardless of what it is. It does, and that basically subverts the question of what kind of energy, where does this come from, is it a closed loop as far as carbon or anything like that, what is it doing to the environment and so on. Doesn't even come into question at that point. So there's a lot of language that's going on around that, and definitely something to watch.
Well, now, domestic energy, the sun is domestic, right?
Yes.
It's, well, I'm not saying the sun is American. What I mean is that it doesn't belong to anybody over anybody else. So if we use the sun, that should be considered domestic energy. The wind turbines, also domestic. Green sources of power.
Right.
This is something we should be embracing more. And why not feel nationalistic about that if we want to? Fine. But why aren't we?
Exactly. Good question. So the thing of it is, like, what I'm talking about is things like fracking and shale and natural gas and stuff like that, that is using new drilling technologies and so on and so forth. And it's interesting because those renewable things that you're talking about, maybe domestic solar or wind production, sort of get lumped into the umbrella of domestic energy. But the distinction between something that is perhaps renewable or, dare I say, sustainable, that is a different distinction. So when you're talking about this, if you talk about domestic energy production, you get to lump in everything: oil, natural gas, even nuclear. Yeah, no joke. I mean, Jim Webb, wasn't that some of the stuff he was saying? I mean, that basically nuclear is viable and a good idea and so on and so forth, which, in a laboratory. But in other words, it's something that I find really interesting, and those distinctions need to be made because I think that as politics ramp up, that's going to get kind of brushed aside. And what you're going to get is the people that are, it's going to be really about anti-war stuff, right? Appealing to domestic energy production to support vets kind of after the fact and maybe in the future, right? Somehow it's anti-war to be for domestic oil production. So forget any investment in solar, forget any investment in wind turbines down in Port Jeff.
That was your idea. That was a great idea. Port Jefferson has smokestacks right on the water, and you said, why not put some wind turbines right there? Would that be any less ugly to have wind turbines? And I think it would be beautiful, actually. I don't think it would be ugly at all. Any place you have smokestacks, have wind turbines.
Yeah, like make it match right with them so it looks like four. You know, make it kind of look like it's built into the idea. It would be a big statement, I think. But so the investment, though, will then go towards, quote, domestic energy, but not towards stuff that is actually renewable or carbon neutral or non-toxic or environmentally, like low environmental impact. That kind of stuff needs to be a part of the discussion. And I'm kind of concerned. I'm afraid, actually, that it's really just going to turn into domestic energy production. And that'll be the language used. And it'll be kind of a xenophobic, pseudo-racist, almost, you know, and kind of appeal a little bit to the anti-war. You know, everybody else, you know, all the, you know, anti-gun hippies, they just, you know, they'll fall in with the anti-war attributes. But
anti-war and racist.
Yeah, I think so. In the same camp. Okay. I think so. I think that's the beauty. That's the kind of art of it. And anyway, to that end, it's a fascinating bit of rhetoric to watch, especially going into the political season. So
yes, absolutely. I guess that's something that we're going to see a lot of in the campaign ahead.
Yeah, yeah, you really have to be specific, especially when you're talking about new technologies in the realm of energy and so on and so forth. There's a lot of excitement for it, but you got to really listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, locally at least we're seeing some movement. We're seeing solar farms being built out east, so there's that. We're seeing all kinds of different things. Sorry, we're doing a radio show now. We can't have a conversation, so I don't know what's going on.
I'm listening. The solar projects and
people
stuff
are asking us questions. So these are things that are happening around us.
Yes. So I don't have any stories with me.
Would you like the story about the guy who threw a bomb into a Walmart?
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, I can hand you that one if you want to see some domestic terrorism, I guess. Although it's not being described that way. It's never described in that particular method.
Okay, sure.
Sorry. It just seemed like you needed a story. It's basically a guy who's mad that Walmart isn't carrying the Confederate flag anymore, so he threw some kind of incendiary device, and it was in Mississippi. What more do you need?
Man who's known for flying a 4-foot-long Mississippi state flag on his car has been accused of bombing a Walmart because the chain stopped selling the flag, police chief said Monday. The explosive made a loud bang, but did not damage anything when it was thrown early Sunday into the 24-hour Walmart. They have 24-hour Walmarts?
Most Walmarts are 24 hours.
That's incredible.
Yeah, out in the middle of America, at least. And they're huge. You can buy anything you want in there, except the Confederate flag, apparently.
Bart Aguirre said Monday, he said bomb technicians reported that the package held enough explosive to damage the store if it had been assembled differently. Marshall E. Leonard of Tupelo, a northeast Mississippi city of 34,500, was jailed on a charge of detonating an explosive, and police were searching his car and home. Strong support of keeping it flying, bringing attention to that. Great. Yeah. He allegedly lit a newspaper-wrapped package and threw it into the store around 1:30 a.m. Sunday.
There you go.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, all he had to do was shout, "God is great," you know, or just have an Islamic name of any sort, and this would be front page everywhere as the latest act of terrorism. But because he's, you know, some guy from Mississippi who wants the old days back and is angry that they don't have Confederate flags anymore, it's just mischief.
Leonard's silver Mazda is bespeckled with stickers of the Mississippi state flag and the Confederate battle flag, and it sports a big state flag on a flexible pole. He was arrested for running a red light near a Walmart.
Wow.
2 a.m. So
interesting.
A little bit of culture.
A little bit. Hey, I want to talk about my healthcare situation.
Sure.
Because that's something that's been kind of annoying me lately. I mentioned that my particular company had decided to quit. And now apparently they're quitting even earlier than before. Basically, oh, it's Frank now. Hey, Frank.
Hey.
What in God's name is going on? There's people staring at us, and we don't know what's happening in this place. All the lights are flashing.
Verizon. That's the one word.
Verizon.
Verizon. They keep fixing it, breaking it.
It's so doing this magical.
All the lights are flashing. I've never seen all the lights flash before. But we didn't know what to do.
So the telemetry.
So none of those alarms aren't really alarms. That's just broken.
It's saying there's no communication.
So we're not on the air. So thank God. This is the worst show we've ever done.
No, you're on the air. You're on the air. You're on the air with 1980s technology right now.
Oh, well, if only that were true, Frank. If only that were true.
That's the exciting part.
It's like Back to the Future.
Wow. Language.
Okay.
We're on the air, but we're not broadcasting.
Yes, you are.
Ugh. I'm trying to get out of this gracefully.
People will hear you in 20 years.
Oh, wow.
In 20 years. So I've got 20 years to, like, protect myself from this.
It's going to go all the way out several thousand miles and then back somehow.
Yeah, folks, if you're listening to this, it's technical problems, and we don't know what we're saying.
Yes, our moon base is sending the signal back to you. And
it's also 95 degrees in here, and that's why you hear a rocket engine, which is the fan behind us.
No, that's three fans. We have an array of fans cooling this monumental thing we call community radio, of which I will mention that magical time of year is upon us. It's Radiothon.
Yeah, I'll talk about my healthcare in a minute because that can wait. Everybody else seems to think that can wait.
No.
So why not wait? It's okay. Don't worry about it.
That's station healthcare, okay? Radiothon is the same kind of policy as healthcare, so it's absolutely related. I was just reminding everyone, but please go on with your search because I'm looking as well, and I think a lot of Americans are looking for healthcare
right
now.
Okay, you might be looking, Kyle, but I have to look and find an answer within the next 2 weeks. I've been given this deadline that, by the way, your healthcare company has decided to quit as of November 30th, and you need to decide who is going to replace them by November 15th for you to be covered on December 1st. You have to pay your premium for November because you're under contract to pay your premium. They can quit and just dump you. That's okay. They can do that. They can get away with that. But you have to pay. And when you do decide on a new company, make sure you get all your paperwork together. Otherwise, you'll be charged twice for the same deductible, and you'll wind up certainly paying a lot more and getting a lot less. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that's the gist of it. And so now what I'm faced with, I can either pay about an average of $150 more a month for coverage that's kind of the same, although the deductible is $1,000 higher. And after I reach my deductible, they only pay 50% of the charge. That's it, just 50%. It's not even full insurance. It's half insurance, but I'm paying $150 more a month. The advantage is that it's accepted here at Stony Brook, which is where I like to go when I go places. The alternative is to get something that's cheaper, about what I'm paying now,
right,
except it's not accepted by Stony Brook. In fact, I don't know where it's accepted. It might not be accepted anywhere near here. But, does it really matter? Because with the higher price plan, I won't meet the deductible, so I'm paying for it anyway. And even if I do meet the deductible, I'm paying 50% after that. Or am I better off with a plan that everybody just agrees we're just not going to take it? Either way, I'm getting nothing. I figure, why not pay less to get nothing? And that's literally the way you have to think in this country to get health care. It's insane. It is so. And people think I'm angry at Obamacare. I'm not. I'm angry that Obamacare doesn't go far enough. I'm angry at the people who didn't stand up for it. I'm angry at those people who are covered by some faceless corporation and everything is paid for, and they don't see a need to think about, well, the self-employed or the people who don't make as much money, those people who need help or who need something comparable to what they have at an affordable price. That's who I'm mad at. And I think we need to go a lot further. This state, I found out, I just found this out yesterday, actually, that we were on the verge of getting a single payer healthcare system. That's something similar to what other countries have in New York State. And it was voted on in the state assembly. It won by a wide margin. It was blocked by the Senate Republicans. There you go. Today is election day, folks. And I was basically saying to everybody, make sure you kick all the Senate Republicans out. I just found out that they're not running this year. So kick them out next year when they're running. Or force them to resign and get them replaced with somebody who will actually push this through. Because that's really the only thing that's going to work. Otherwise, people have to do all the work themselves. They have to figure out who takes their plan. First of all, I think if you have insurance, it should be accepted everywhere. It should be accepted. Stony Brook should not be able to say, oh, we only take this one type of insurance. Everybody else is screwed. And I'm not picking on them in particular. I'm picking on every healthcare outlet that's there. They all do this. And they should not be allowed to do that. If you have insurance, it should be accepted any place. I don't care about your accounting issues or disagreements you have with different doctors or whatever. Not the patient's problem. Stop making it the patient's problem. If you pay for insurance, you should be covered. End of story. And this deductible nonsense, that's got to go away too. You know, you're paying insurance to get insurance, not to have another huge amount that you have to cover after that. And then to only cover 50% after you cover the huge amount after the premium. It's insane. It's almost farcical. And I have 2 weeks to figure it out.
I have a little longer. but absolutely, that is really inconvenient. And it is really broken, and it's really like going through the motions, it feels like. So anyway, I've open enrollment. I'll have a little longer to look at it.
You broke your hand in Canada. You broke your hand in Canada, and you've paid less to get your hand fixed, taken care of up there, and everything after that. You're paying less than I will pay in premiums to not break my hand.
Yeah, but I'm also paying premiums.
Yes, but you're paying premiums in this country that don't even pretend to cover anything like that. I'm talking about what actually paid for your problem, the ambulance ride, the doctor, the cast, all the things they did up there. And then, yes, you had some physical therapy down here and you had the cast removed, but that's really all they did in this country. Meanwhile, you're paying insurance premiums that, if you had broken your hand in this country, wouldn't have done anything to help you. Not at all.
Yeah, I have Stony Brook to thank for a lot of the other stuff that I did down here, though. They've got a really good system for helping people out and so on, and giving you the right information and not getting mismanagement in your treatment and so on. So, but I can't credit my insurer for any of that. But I kind of have ignored them because of the open enrollment stuff's coming up. It's funny, the exchange won't let you pay. I would pay through the exchange, and then the exchange would pay them, which was kind of nice for me, because previously I had paid insurers that would either let me pay quarterly or pay every month with no leeway as far as late payment or how long till you pay, like when it's due, we cut you off, that kind of thing, which is terrible if you actually, you know, think you're insured and then go and have some treatment, and then you find out you weren't insured for a month because they decided they didn't like when you paid, even though it was like within the week of getting, you know, the notice, which took longer than when it was actually due to get through the mail and all that.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's insane how out of sync you can get. And so I've got a lot more of, I think, a relaxed perspective about it. I'm not expecting anything from them. And in fact, I was using the exchange to pay late, basically, in my own sort of protest with that system, because they couldn't cut me off. The exchange was like legally mandated. And so I was signed up, and I found that was, less stress. You don't get these threatening letters about, oh, we're going to cut you off. But now, you have to pay directly to the insurer group. Like, they don't want to do that anymore, so it seems like they wised up a little bit. But it was so useless, I just stopped looking at the whole thing. I mean, I did a cursory look for this upcoming period of what was available, and you pretty much have the least worst out of a lot of bad choices, and that's as good as you're going to get, which I will say is probably higher rates, you know, changes that aren't good for you, the patient.
No.
And I've even heard that where I go, or my primary physician and stuff, I heard that they're not actually going to work with this this co-op that I'm with that I've only been with for a year. So now I'm going to not I'm not going to be in the network of my practitioner. So of the choices that I chose, I'll have to either stick with this co-op and not have coverage at my preferred practitioner, or switch entirely again so that I can stick with my doctor.
That should be illegal. That should not be on you. You should not have to do all these calculations and figure out, oh, who takes what plan and what do I have to do in order to get this kind of health care. No, you should pay a certain amount, and I think that amount should be somewhere in the 300 to 400 range, somewhere in between that if you can afford it. If you can't, you need to get help. I mean, you should get help from all these entities. You're entitled to it. But that amount of money should entitle you to health care. No deductibles, no running around trying to find who's in what network. And if they just instituted that, I know it sounds very simplistic, but it doesn't have to be more complicated than that. Or ideally, you know, take it one step further and just put it on taxes like they do in other countries. And everything you hear that refutes that, I think is a lie, because I've looked into it. The tax rate in Canada is not that different than the tax rate here. Maybe for millionaires it is. I didn't look at them, but I looked at middle class people, and they pay about the same, except they get health care. They don't pay premiums. It comes from their taxes, and that's true in other countries as well. So there's that. The long waits for appointments. You know what? I got to wait a long time for an appointment in this country. So sorry, that's not valid either. Everybody has to wait for appointments, and you know, sometimes it's quick, sometimes it's not. But to say that Canadian healthcare, that's the norm, it's not. You got treated right away. You had a follow-up appointment in 1 week. So I think that it's really one of these things that they try to use to spread misinformation. And also, you know what? If you're not happy with it, you always have the option to go out and get your own healthcare and pay for it yourself without using health insurance. So anybody in Canada can do that. So they have that option as well.
If it really and truly worked, I would gladly pay whatever the cost was as long as it was competitive,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's, I think, the clincher, is that this doesn't work for us, doesn't serve me the way it should. I end up doing a whole lot of clerical stuff just to get exceptions making claims and so on based on coverage I don't have, and it shouldn't be that inverted. It should be, as you said, that, you know, whatever injury, wherever you are, I'm saying even internationally,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no excuse. We should have coverage across the country, wherever it is. I don't believe that it takes overhead to really quickly calculate the costs for different providers. I really feel like there is technology and processes out there, tools that could help make universal coverage universal, and on and on. So it's
you see, they really put us through the grinder on this, and this affects your health. People get so stressed out dealing with health insurance, just trying to get it to work, that it actually affects their health, and it's just, it's wrong. It needs to be simple. Yes, pay your health insurance and get health insurance. That's it. That's all we ask. Yeah, I know it's complicated. I know that some pharmaceutical companies and doctors don't get along with other entities and things like that. You guys got to deal with that on your own. Don't make it the patient's problem.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. And it really does pass the costs, the burden along. And it's essentially their job. They've whittled down what their job is to where they just have a capacity to deny you and a other capacity to collect from you. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll give you an example. I have a checkup coming up this month. I made it months ago because it takes a long time to get an appointment. And actually, I'm entitled to one free checkup a year. I think everybody is. And what happened was I had a checkup in March, and they billed it the wrong way. They billed it as a consultation instead of a checkup. So I had to pay several hundred dollars for this. And I asked for a checkup, not a consultation. And they said, okay, we'll check again. And they appealed it to themselves, and they ruled in their own favor. Literally, that is what happened. They said, yeah, you know, we asked ourselves, and we believe we billed you correctly, so you have to pay. So I said, okay, you know what? If you're going to do this to me, at least give me a real checkup then that I don't have to pay for. And that was the one coming up in November. And now I hear that because my insurance company went out of business or is going out of business at the end of November, they may not accept my insurance company anymore, even though I'm required to pay the premium for that insurance company. Can you believe that? So I might wind up paying for insurance and not even getting my free checkup unless I do all this research to find out if they're covering that and maybe get some kind of replacement. And I'll tell you right now, they're not getting paid if they pull that kind of nonsense. And there will be a huge scene. I think a scene reminiscent of the EasyJet scene that took place with me in the center. Where was that? In Switzerland? Where they wouldn't let me bring my computer bag on without charging me 100 euros?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I got the computer on. Let's put it that way.
I didn't recognize you.
I'll get my damn checkup, too.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what it's going to come to. It really is about the market. It's about people. And we'd love to hear about this. If you have funny experiences insuring yourself, especially if you do it privately, send us a note, otw@2600.com. We would love to hear about that. Any kind of tips and tricks, and don't blame. I mean, we've blamed the whole system already. We're with you on that. But solutions and how do people get together to exert some direction and exert their will to, so to speak, with these corporations. Get some understanding across. I think it really is about finding the right groups to be aligned with, even if you are independent and private.
I blame people for not speaking up enough about this and letting the Republicans get their way far too often as far as blocking any kind of reasonable reform. We should be so much further ahead than we are now. And you know, those of you who say, yes, this is proof that Obamacare doesn't work. No, this is proof that we need more and that this is only the start. We already tried it the other way. We already tried it with healthcare companies running the show themselves. It doesn't work. People lose their homes. People don't get treatment. All kinds of horrible things happen.
There's huge discrepancies in billing costs.
Yeah. And it's not right. It's not right. It's not what the rest of the world does. So we need to go further. Whoever gets elected president, hopefully on the Democratic side, needs to push that further and basically start ignoring all these people that keep standing in the way because they do not represent the majority. Speaking of which, the debate last week, that was a doozy on CNBC.
Oh, wow. They were like yelling at the moderators. They were terrible.
They were all terrible. I mean, the first question, which was a stupid question. I mean, I include the moderators in who's terrible. The first question was name your greatest weakness, which is a real, you know, dumb question. Everyone's going to use it to say, yeah, I guess I'm just too honest or something ridiculous
like
that.
I'm just a really nice guy. I'm too nice.
And the first guy, the governor of Ohio, doesn't even try to answer that question. Instead, he gives a little vote for me speech. You know, I should have been thrown out right then. If you don't answer the question, get out. You're done. You know, they need to be a little bit firmer with that. Everybody was interrupting everybody else. Everybody was saying, I want to follow up because he got the follow up. And it's just a bunch of children. And the whole format, here's what I think should happen. No moderators. You just get all of them in there, like, you know, 12 angry men or whatever, and see what happens. See who takes command. See who is offensive to others. See if anybody is able to get anything done, get a conversation started, get dialogue going. But all this, you have 30 seconds to sum this up. That's not natural. It's not a real conversation. And we have yet to see that in any of these debates, real conversations going back and forth, where one candidate can directly have an interchange with another candidate and not have somebody saying, you know, Senator, it's time that you shut up. You know, sometimes it is, but I kind of like to let people dig their own graves by saying all kinds of things they wish they hadn't said rather than cut them off.
I like that.
Yeah.
I would go a little further. I would say I want to see them build something together. You know, forget the whole, don't debate. You'll see the leadership, you know, build a house. You know, maybe Habitat for Humanity.
What, you mean right there on stage? Build a house.
Yeah, let's film that. I mean, forget the debate, the issues. Wow. No one cares about that anyway. Let's film them all working together on something some teamwork.
Yeah, but Trump's going to throw somebody off. It's going to turn into a reality show. You know, it's. I like the idea. And if it wasn't for reality shows already, I think it would be a good idea. But I think that might be a good step. You know, something along those lines, something outside the stupidity that we see every couple of weeks.
Well, I was thinking of, like, you know, the rope course or, like, the trust exercises or something.
Oh, come on.
They make them do something like that.
Governor Christie, you're going to make him do something like that?
Yeah, yeah. Trust, you know, fall and we'll catch you.
All right, nobody is going to volunteer to catch him. I'll tell you that right now. So that's just mean. That's mean that you have to even bring that up. So how about, you know, a board game? That's it.
Jenga.
They play Monopoly. They all play Monopoly. All right. What's wrong with that?
All right.
I think you can have,
it's definitely in the spirit.
Is it up to 8 players only? Well, if that's the case, they'll be down to 8 pretty soon.
It'll be like 6 hours. It'll be about as long as the debates are now.
Or poker.
Oh.
Tells a lot about people.
Wow.
I would say chess, except you know that half of them don't know how to play, and it's only 2 people, really. But, poker could be good. Scrabble. There's no limit. Well, actually, there must be a limit because there's only 52 cards in a deck. You can't have 18 people playing one hand of poker, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have to figure that out. But we definitely need to do something different, and we're open to suggestions. And are we out of time? I can only see the first part of the clock.
So I'm afraid you have 1 minute.
I just see 6:00, and I didn't realize it was 6:59, 6:56. I'm sorry. Okay, so we do have time for the outro.
You have 1 minute.
All right. We lied. Well, we didn't lie. This is like Obama being accused of lying every time he changes his mind. We thought we were going to have time to take phone calls, and we didn't. But what we will do is, if you call us, 631-632-6901 at 7 or after, and say you want to pledge for Off the Wall, we'll pick up the phone and take your pledge. How's that?
We will.
Yeah.
For Off the Wall, this is Kyle.
This is Emmanuel. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
It's awfully considerate of you to think of me here, and I'm most obliged to you for making it clear that I'm not here. And I never knew the moon could be so big, and I never knew the moon could be so blue, and I'm grateful that you threw away my old shoes and brought me here instead dressed in red. And I'm wondering who could be writing this song.
not exactly the Middle East correspondent for the
Finn's Revolution right now until the 9 p.m. hour. Give us a call, 631-632-6901. Make a pledge of support to WUSB Stony Brook. Any match, great. $5, $10, $15, $1 million. Give us a call right now, 631-632-6901. Just a few moments. Glenn Mercer of the Feelies on the air live with us. Stay tuned. That's right. Of course, that's the theme from The Prisoner, and this is the theme from The Feelies. In just a few moments, Glenn Mercer of The Feelies will be on the air talking about his brand new record. Stay tuned.
You remind me of a TV show. That's alright, I'll watch it anyway. I don't talk much cause it gets in the way. Don't let it get in the way. We do our job, we get things done. Work real hard, get things done. The time is fair, but not now. Can't relax with this things to do. Big plans pay while little ones pay. It's nice to know when it's part of your life. I don't want much and I need even less. It's time to sacrifice.
those are the Feelies right there. Crazy rhythms right here on WUSB. Stony Brook, and just a few moments, the guitar player and founder of the Feelies is going to be on the air with us, and that would be the great Glenn Messer, and it's we're very much looking forward to having him on the air. A band I've seen so many times over the years, and so let's hear something from his new record. He's coming out with a great new instrumental record called Incidental Hum, and this is something from that record. I think just after this is over, we shall be speaking with Glenn on the air. So here's a little something from Incidental Hum right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Yeah, that was Hannah right here from on WUSB Stony Brook from the great, great, gorgeous instrumental record from Glenn Messer of the Feelies fame and founder of the Feelies and all the rest of that. And we are extremely lucky to have the composer and artist behind this great record called Incidental Hum with us right now on the air. Glenn, are you with us?
Yeah, I am. How's it going?
It's going fantastically. The album is just a beautiful thing, and the decision, you know, obviously we'll get into a little bit of Feely's history just briefly, shortly, but I want to talk a little about this record. It's just like, what was the impetus to, how did you decide to make it a instrumental record?
Well, I didn't set out to make a record. What I did was... I had some time. I hadn't written any new songs, but I had the urge to record, and that kind of coincided with me kind of recollecting a period of time when I listened to a lot of more electronic art kind of stuff. You know, like Bowie's Low and Frippin' Eno, Brian Eno, Kraftwerk,
sure,
Bill Glass. It also, I was thinking back to a time when Bill and I composed the score to the Smithereens movie, and that in turn led us to kind of develop a new way to work, which was sort of improvising, although all music is improvising, but it's sort of recording without any ideas and just kind of going with following your muse and improvising with the recording process, and use the recording process as a as an art tool in a way, as a composing element, recording procedure itself. So, you know, I have the ability to record here at home, so it was really just started as an experiment. And the first song went real well, and I kept doing more songs, and then as I listened, I would, they kind of, in my mind, they would bring up images of landscapes or particular environments. So then I thought, well, it might be nice to actually imagine the environment first and then compose the music to it, as you would a scoring a film. So I did a few like that, and then shortly after that, I came across the cassette that I totally had forgotten about that had other instrumentals I had done maybe 10 years ago. So I transferred that and worked more on those. And before I knew it, I had like a dozen songs. So I kind of put them all together and did a few covers and wasn't really thinking about a record, but we made them available at our shows and kind of passed them out to friends. And it's really our manager who suggested actually putting it out as a record, so...
Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous stuff. And did you have something like, I mean, I'm just asking because obviously you're experimenting and doing stuff. Did you have lyrics in mind for certain things at certain times? A few songs
I thought, well, I could kind of imagine these being possibly the basis for Feely songs.
Right, right.
And then I thought, well, if I put words and lyrics in make them that way, they'll kind of ruin what I like about them to begin with. And it seemed to go against the whole concept of how the songs developed and came about. So that was just like a fleeting idea, but I didn't really take it too seriously.
Yeah, I love the whole concept of the instrumental record. As a matter of fact, when I first got my hands on it, I was like listening to it, and I was like, I was expecting, you know, a vocal to come in because I didn't know the whole background at that juncture when I first got it. And it was so, I didn't miss the vocals, you know?
I know it is strange for someone who's the singer in a band to
right
have vocals, but.
Yeah. And it's got to be weird, right? You must have, had some temptations there, but, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous thing. And you were just mentioning Bill before, and we're talking about Bill Million, right?
Yeah. What I wanted to mention, it was also, very liberating to be able to, compose on the keyboard. I have played keyboard on Feely's records before, but never to the extent that I did on this record. So it was that was a lot of fun, just not having any particular boundary, and also not having to have the idea of performing the songs. That was liberating too. Allowed me to be more creative.
Yeah, I guess that's a thing that, especially when you're in a band format, you. Kind of always think of you're setting it up to play it together and live. So it's a different world when you're just doing most of the stuff yourself.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's a whole different thing, a whole different mindset. So I'm guessing that a lot of times that composing with your, you know, working with your bandmates on a tune and what have you, like let's say with the Feelies, you're obviously, you know, working out how you would play it. Period. In addition to live, and now are you gonna be taking any of this stuff on the road and doing anything live with it?
Don't have any plans to do that. It'd probably be fun, but it doesn't really strike me as you know, rock club type of material. If the right, I guess, venue and
right.
opportunity came along, I might consider it, but.
Right, it would have to be something, yeah, of course, because it'd have to be something that really could allow people to pay attention to the showcase of the instrumental material, which is a different world than, you know, your hook-laden lyric-based song, you know?
Yeah, actually, back when we had our instrumental band, the Willies, we
right.
would often have tapes.
Right, and the Willies, of course. Well, we'll get to that shortly. I myself was just, and this is just a little background about you guys. Actually, I recently made a trip back to. I was in Hoboken preparing a. This is the 100th anniversary year of Frank Sinatra. Okay, so we were doing a little recording on a walking tour of the various Sinatra sites in Hoboken. And naturally, I took advantage of some of that time to stop by Maxwell's, which I hadn't been at in many years, and which I saw the Feelies at many, many times in my youth. And just a great place. And it's still a cool place. Have you been back to Maxwell's in recent times?
Not since Todd left, no.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's right, right. But Maxwell's is still extant, and it's still there physically, so, yeah.
But does it look real different? I heard they redid the back room.
It looks all different, but it just was something, just because I hadn't been there in years and years, that it was just like, wow, this is Maxwell's, you know? And the front, you know, is you know, inside and the front is very much the same, but the back, you're right, the live room is completely different, yeah. But yeah, so that little trip to Hoboken was quite a trip back in time for me while I was doing my little Sinatra prep for our show we're doing on Sinatra's. We're doing some ska songs for Sinatra's birthday and stuff like that. So,
if he ever drank there, that'd be interesting.
That's right. I don't know if he did, but I just had to make a side trip to Maxwell's when we were back there. So tell us a little about your memories of those years, because that's kind of where you guys cut your teeth, right, down at Maxwell's and Hoboken and all that, right?
Well, I guess, you know, we started playing closer to home, like around the Hailden area, and then New York, really, before...
Right, of course, right.
It was until after Crazy Rhythms came out when we played Maxwell's for the first time.
Oh, okay, because that's probably where I first saw you way back then, and those Maxwell shows were just... great. Do you have good memories of those years?
Oh, definitely. As a matter of fact, quite shortly after we played our first show, we kind of made it a yearly event to play there on the 4th of July.
And that's right. National holiday, right? Beautiful thing. And that what a band. And you even played there as did you play there as the Willies too? Because I think I saw you there as the Willies, no?
Yeah. Young Woo and Tripes. And
right.
Actually, those offshoot bands played there probably more often than the Feelies did.
That's right. But we were always, you know, back in those years, attracted to anything associated with the Feelies. So it was like, you know, whatever bands you guys were associated with, we were down there for it. And just some magic times in the music scene. So what year? Tell us a little about the Feelies' background as far as you guys getting together and starting up. In Hallidon.
As a matter of fact, next year will be the 40th anniversary of our first show.
Wow.
Thinking about doing something to commemorate that.
That'd be wonderful. And so you and Bill and who else was it? It was Dave?
Dave, yeah. He was the original drummer.
Right. And how did you guys get started deciding to be the Feelies as opposed to some other band, you know? Who you're influenced heavily by the Velvets, obviously, right?
Yeah. Well, Bill and I knew each other. We played briefly in a band. I don't think we did any shows, but we had jammed together a few times. And Dave and I had been in a band, and when the bass player of that band left, we invited Bill in. So it was originally us three with a singer, and that band broke up. And we couldn't find a singer. It took over on the vocals, and Bill switched to guitar, and then we brought a bass player in. So that was really the beginning of the Feelies.
Okay, and obviously you guys started in Hallidon, which is where you grew up. I don't know if everybody else grew up there. Did they? You all grew up there?
Kind of near by. Dave's from Wayne. Bill originally lived Hawthorne and Prospect Park. They're neighboring towns.
Okay.
I grew up in North Hailden.
So you guys were all on the scene around that area.
Yeah.
Okay. And tell us about you guys. One of the few American bands to be signed to Stiff.